Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
Listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Emerald Flow Show. We are a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Network. And as you may have figured out by me doing the intro rather than Gerard, this is actually going to be a solo show. Unfortunately, Gerard is not feeling well right now, and I kind of just want to put something out. So instead of just going out and looking for a guest host, I decided to just put out some solo audio, because it's been a while since we've done an episode, and I think it's good to just put something out, because otherwise there's just more stuff that will just accumulate on our plate. So you're going to listen to me kind of ramble on for like the next hour and a half. We'll see how long this goes. First things first, though, there's a few points. So unfortunately, and this really just broke a couple of hours ago before I hit record, is that we got the unfortunate news that Joe Doering has passed away from a long-running battle with brain cancer. This is obviously devastating news. Joe was such a kind of amazing part of like Japanese wrestling for so many years, and like him fighting on against cancer for so many years and actually managing to come, like the first time he got cancer, he actually managed to come back to like have like a career again, which is amazing. But I don't even want to go too far into kind of talking about Joe at this point, to be honest. Because I talked to Gerard, and basically once he feels better, we are going to record a special on just Joe Doering. So we are going to go much more in depth of like Joe Doering and kind of like his run in All Japan and what it all meant at the time, and what it all meant kind of long term as well, and like what his impact was and just kind of what kind of person it was. So kind of look forward to that whenever we're going to record that. Probably next week or at some point soon, definitely. Then the other note is that Ryo Inoue has been injured. He's suffered a knee injury that I don't think it's quite clear yet how long it's actually going to keep him out, but that's obviously very, very unfortunate timing because he really was a guy that was just starting to kind of really break out this year. And this kind of really, really derails his momentum, kind of, like, probably not too bad. I mean, he is still insanely talented. He is still insanely young. So, like, unless this, like, knee injury, like, massively limits his mobility going forward, I don't think it really will, like, massively derail his career. But it is nevertheless, like, very, very unfortunate timing on this. And then, as well, another unfortunate injury news is that Hikaru Sato kind of suffered a head injury in his match with Masato Tanaka for the GHC hardcore title and had to go to the hospital. And it very much seems that his career is in serious jeopardy because it was revealed later that he apparently suffered a stroke while in hospital. So it very much is up in the air whether or not he will be able to return to the ring. And I think even if he's ever able to return to ring, it's going to be a long time until we see him again. But just given how long he's been wrestling and everything, I think this match with Tanaka really might have been the last time we've ever seen him in the ring. As sad as that is, so. But yeah, we'll wait a little bit more until we kind of like maybe talk about his career more as a whole. Until it becomes more clear whether or not he is actually fully retired or not. But yeah, that's just another kind of unfortunate kind of injury news. So another thing, because of us kind of having not recorded for a while, is that there's just a lot of stuff piled up. So when we did do a recording, right? We did the whole special recording talking about kind of Cyber Agent being a part of being a part owner of New Japan now and kind of what that potentially all means for like Noah and like the wider like wrestling scape as a whole. But we haven't really done like a classical like Emerald Flow Show episode in a while where we just kind of go over a bunch of recent shows that have happened and kind of like talk about the matches there. So there's just an insanely long pile of stuff that has piled up there now. And to be quite honest, I don't think anybody here wants to listen to me kind of go over like house show matches from like a month ago. So I'm just kind of going to be I'm going to be talking more broadly about some of these shows or kind of just some general trends that I saw from that. Especially as it pertains to the Neo Global Tag League matches. I don't think there really were any kind of really major standout matches during the tournament that I think really require me of having to like really go in depth on it. So I'm just kind of going to talk about more generally about like the different themes that were in the tournament and kind of how I kind of perceived them during the tournament. So I'm kind of just going to go kind of like top to bottom. Like basically I'm just going to go top to bottom kind of on the final standings of the group stage and going to go with group A and then group B. So the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows. So I thought these two guys, like I thought they actually worked hard. I thought they actually put in the effort, which I did not expect them to do. Especially because this was just such a like house show tour where just I fully expected them to just kind of dog it most of the way. But I don't think they really did dog it during the tournament. Like I don't think they were like a blow away or anything like that. But I did think they actually kind of really like try to like entertain people during their matches. It seems that their run is over after the final, but who knows? Like this version of the Good Brothers, I wouldn't be opposed to bringing back, even if it is more on if it is on a limited run basis like this, right? Like I think the way they did it, where they like brought them in briefly at the beginning of the year, and then they brought them back for like they brought them back like a couple of times, and then they brought them back for like this tournament, where like each time I think they actually just acquainted themselves well. is a good use of them. So I wouldn't, like, if it's on this basis, like, I don't really want them to be there for like an entire year straight. I don't think they would even want to be there for that long. So I think just bringing them in for limited runs like this, I think, is a good idea. Maybe they're going to keep doing that going forward, but yeah, we'll see. Tetsuya Naito and Bushi, that was kind of rough. Like, Naito is just done, which means that Bushi has to carry like the vast majority of kind of the in-ring work, right? Like, that has been a general issue kind of during this run, where it's like, Bushi is not bad, but he's also not great, and he's definitely not the guy that you want to be like carrying the majority of the work in your matches. And fortunately, he just has to do that because Naito is just kind of shot. Something that I did like about this team, though, is that I think they're leaning a lot more into kind of being heelish, basically. I don't think they're really out and out heels, but they're definitely like leaning a lot more heelish than they were early in the run, because they are also getting booed. Like, people don't really like, it's really just like, it's a New Japan nostalgia run that, like, it just doesn't really, or it's a New Japan nostalgia act that really only works as a nostalgia act in New Japan. Like, NOAH fans just aren't going to react to it in the same way that New Japan fans will. And I think they finally kind of realize that that's what's happening. So they are leaning a lot more into, like, well, being assholes as well. Like, and kind of more into being outsiders that have just come into this promotion. And, like, they're going to show them, like, that they're better than everybody because they're, like, New Japan guys or whatever. Or used to be New Japan guys. So I think that kind of act is working a lot better. Because also, it's not like they're, like, massively cheating heels. Like, outside of, you know, like, Bushi spraying a mist and all of that. Like, they're kind of just unlikable assholes. And I think that actually works pretty well. It's just that the actual in-ring work is just rough. And there's really nothing, not much you can do there. But them kind of refining the act has actually helped their matches at least a little bit. Tetsuya Endo and Hayata, to be quite frank, completely forgettable. If you had told me that they actually hadn't been in this tournament, I would believe you. Because I struggle to really come up with really just about anything that they've done during this tournament. Just kind of very much like nothing team. Masaki Tamiya and Takashi Sugura. It's such a frustrating team, basically, because you know they are the bones of a great tag team here, right? Like, and if they do actually, like, the actual, like, wrestling parts of their matches are still great. It's just that it's just marred by, like, Team 2000X bullshit, and it just keeps what could be great matches to just good matches, basically. Yeah, and it's a very frustrating team. The Lycos Gym of Kid Lycos and Kid Lycos 2. They definitely tried. I will give them that. It's Kid Lycos is a bit up and down there. He just never really has been a guy that really has managed to, like, find, like, a high level of consistency, or, like, really, like, find a lot of good ways of, like, basically finding a good match structure that isn't just kind of doing shit. So, yeah, but they definitely did try. They definitely were, like, again, like, I think actually, like, once you're kind of new in a country as well, I think this kind of style of just doing shit actually still works quite well, because you're still trying to get over. And they definitely were trying to, like, get themselves over and maybe get themselves more bookings in the future. If that'll work for them, who knows, but they at least did try, so that's something. Kaito Kiyomiya and Harutoki / Alejandro. So in this case, Alejandro got injured. Harutoki got injured, so he was replaced by Alejandro kind of like midway through the tournament. Yeah, I don't know, also kind of a team that I thought was doing fine. It's the kind of, like, they didn't really win a whole lot because they were doing the whole kind of story of, like, All Rebellion kind of just falling apart, essentially, or, like, just kind of being on the way out. Yeah, I mean, their matches were fine, but they were also kind of very much, like, based around that storyline, and, like, your enjoyment of these matches is very heavily dependent how much you give a shit about All Rebellion. And I do not give a shit about All Rebellion because this faction has been dead for more than six months is actually being generous. It's probably been a dead faction for a year at this point. So I really, really hope that it's finally over and everybody else can just move on to something different and just more entertaining. But yeah, we'll see. Block B, the Jonetsu Max, Manabu Soya, and Yuki Ino. I actually think Noah has found something here. I mean, the act is a little goofy, but it is over. And both men also seem to be really, really into it, which helps it as well. Like it being kind of a goofy act, kind of like it kind of risks kind of crossing like the line into being too goofy, right? But because these two just commit with their entire heart and body to this act, I do think it actually works because of that. So yeah, no, I do think they found something here, and very clearly Noah believes so as well, given that, you know, they had them win the tournament and then put the titles on them. So yeah, I hope they actually keep them together for a while, and I'm curious where it goes. They probably will have to refine the act a little bit if they want to keep them together for longer, because I also get the feeling that, like, if they don't change up this act over time, I think it's going to start grating on everybody's nerves in the future. But for now, I very much enjoy the Jonetsu Max. Now Michimaru Fuji and Kenno. So, yeah. I also enjoyed them. Not really much to say about them. Just very, very solid work from both men. It feels weird to not be able to say that much about a team that I actually mostly enjoyed for the tournament, but there really isn't much more to say than they had good matches. That's it, really. Yoshiki and Nomura and Stallion Rogers. So I'm not the biggest fan of Stallion Rogers. But I will say that again, he was trying hard here. He really seemed like a guy that was like putting in the effort because he felt like this was a chance for him to like get more bookings. So we'll see if that will be the case. Like again, he was a guy that was brought in previously, right? But it seems like him and Inamura kind of know each other, have like some sort of connection. So like Inamura being more pushed now clearly means that like there's a chance that maybe he, like if Rogers can get the spot as like Inamura's like regular tag team partner, like that's a really good spot to have, is like at what is like, I would say Inamura at worst is like the third top, is like a top three guy in the company right now. So if you have that spot as like the tag team partner of the top three guy in the company, that's something that probably will get you regular bookings. Ozawa and Tadasuke, just a lot of like shtick is what they did. I didn't really enjoy it. Kazuyuki Fujita and Muhammad Yone. I actually did enjoy this team. Just like two grumpy old men that just went in there and just beat the shit out of people. Very, very fun team. Didn't really result in a lot of success for them. But I definitely enjoyed them just kind of being in there and just being grumpy fuckheads and just being like, we're not going to take any shit from these young guys and we're just going to like beat them up and then just see if you can like outlast us old man. And if you're able to outlast like us old man, then you're probably going to beat us. But if we can just like beat the shit out of you in like 10 minutes and then just pin you, then we're going to win the match. Fun match structure. Kenta and Katsumi Inahara. So they obviously didn't win any matches because Inahara is still kind of positioned as a young boy. But it's also pretty clear that he's going to move out of that sooner rather than later, right? Because again, he's not like a typical young boy. It's more like you just joined the company as a guy that already has some experience. So we're going to give you like the brief young boy stint so that you basically become one of our guys. Because now you went through a dojo, you were one of our young boys. So now you're one of our guys instead of like an outsider that came in, so we can push you after that. And I think that's basically what's going to happen here. Showed a lot of good fire. I think him and Kenta were like an overall fairly fun team as well. And I'm very excited of kind of what they're going to do with Inahara going forward. Okay, and then gonna go over the Monday Magic Inside Out season final. You know what? Maybe actually let's go more and talk about like generally about the season. I thought it was kind of a middling season, to be quite honest. I think the kind of gimmick of Monday Magic, like, well, for lack of a better term, the magic's kind of worn off a bit. It's fine, mostly. It's, you just kind of have to lower your expectations. Like, it's not what it was at the beginning when, like, you generally had, like, no idea who was, like, gonna come through the curtain at these shows, and it genuinely, like, felt exciting, where you're like, oh, man, I never thought of, like, this matchup. Where now, it has a roster, basically. Like, right, there are still some surprises on here. Like, there's still, like, every once in a while, you still get the, like, surprise of, like, oh, my God, I can't believe, like, this guy's at Monday Magic, and they booked him against this guy. That's such a cool idea. Like, you still get that every once in a while. But most of it is kind of just, like, a fairly established roster of, like, mostly Noah guys. Then some, like, Euro guys that Nozawa picked up God knows where. And Kaito Kiyomiya. And Titus Alexander. And that's the roster, basically. And then they just kind of do random matches. Aren't really very many, like stories of feuds. Like, you get them every once in a while, but mostly they are just kind of shows that happen. And then the season ends, and it's like, yeah, I guess that was fine. And it basically, you need to go into these shows now expecting something that will be perfectly fine. You're not really going to get anything on, like, a Monday Magic show that is, like, a complete stinker. Like, you will get some rough workers here and there. But you will also have, like, a main event that involves some, like, pretty good workers as well, that, like, giving you a match that you're going to enjoy. But overall, it's just kind of a product that is very much just kind of there and exists. So, yeah. I mean, to be fair, you can't really keep up, like, the same thing that you had early on, right? Like, where it's just like, oh, you never know who's gonna, like, there's only so many workers out there that you realistically can book for this, but it's just, yeah, it's mostly just kind of there. Okay, and then let's talk about, just very briefly, about the ADA debut 50th anniversary show on the 20th of June from the Agematsu Town Community Center in front of 603 fans. So really only want to talk about the main event here, which was a GHC Junior Heavyweight title match between ADA and Dragon Bane. Dragon Bane being the defending champion, and ADA defeating Dragon Bane in 22:57 with the Salamander to win the title. Going into the match, I did not expect a title change here, because Dragon Bane had just won the title, and I thought maybe he was going to be in for, like, a bit more of a lengthy, like, title reign and everything. But kind of as I was watching the match, and just kind of the way the match was structured, I was more and more thinking, what's, like, you can't, like, basically you can't send these fans home with an ADA loss. Like, that's just gonna be, like, too deflating, basically. Like, that's just kind of would be, like, would leave, like, such a, like, bitter taste on everybody's mouth if you just, like, Dragon Bane just, like, pins ADA for the 1-2-3, and then just his music plays, and then people just go home afterwards. That would have been, like, such a deflating end to this. So I was like, oh, and then, yeah, it turns out, no, like, it is actually ADA just won the match and won the title as well. How do I feel about it? It's, I don't know. I'm current, like, prior to this, I was very, very down on ADA. Like, he just really went back into just lazy ADA, not giving a shit, not putting in any effort into any of his matches, just kind of existing on the roster, which is just, unfortunately, just you know, the myopicness of Eita is just a thing that's going to stay. Like, at this point, I don't think he's ever going to change. Like, it's just who he is. It's just who he's going to be for his entire career. But, I mean, that also means, like, when he kind of swings back, like, he is generally pretty good. And he was good here. Like, he was very clearly motivated. I did kind of flirt with going 4 stars on this match. I don't think it quite got there. It's just, like, a hair sliver under it. But I thought it was, like, a pretty good match. Like, they really worked it well as, like, Eita being kind of the hometown hero. And then, like, Dragon Bane actually taking a good chunk of the match. And then Eita just, like, having to, like, claw his way back into the match and, like, desperately trying to go for the win and everything. I thought that worked really, really well. And then the just pop at the end when Eita actually won the title was, like, it, like, could feel that it was, like, a really, like, feel-good moment for the hometown crowd. Where we go from here, I'm not entirely sure. If this is the Eita that we're going to get for, like, the rest of the reign, however long it's going to be, then I'm perfectly fine with it. If it's going to be the Eita that we've gotten over the last couple of months, then we might be in for, like, a bit of a rough one. Especially since Hayata is the first challenger. I'm really curious how that one's going to go. The, like, we're a couple of years past the, like, Hayata wins LOL meme now. So I don't know if he's winning. Like, it very much feels like the company has kind of moved, and especially Junior Division has kind of moved past Hayata now. I can't rule it out that he wins, but I don't think it's going to be a long reign in that case. But at that point, well, if Bane, like, loses the title immediately to Eita, and then Eita immediately loses to Hayata, and then maybe Hayata doesn't get that long of a reign, and, like, we're kind of starting to really hot potato that belt as well. So, which I guess you can do, because whoever, like, kind of is champion before the N1 starts is probably going to be a champion for a while, because there's not going to be a title defense most likely during that tournament. So, yeah, who knows what they're planning here with the junior division. It's just that, you know, there are, like, more, like, younger guys and everything that you could be pushing as well. So I'm not against Eita having maybe a bit of a run with the belt here where he gets, like, you know, like, 3 defenses or so. And then you kind of, like, move it back onto a younger guy. If we're just returning to, like, Eita and Hayata, like, feuding for the belt forever, I think that would be a massive step back and just really not a good idea. But I also feel like they're kind of building up, right, to Daiki Urashima finally winning this belt. Though I feel like maybe we're, like, I have the feeling that they might be holding this off until the New Year's Eve show. But to really, like, make it, like, the big deal that it's supposed to be, but we'll see what they're actually going to do with the junior title in the meantime. Okay, and then we go to the Noah Legacy Rise 2026. From the 25th of June, from Tokyo Korakuen Hall, in front of 1,202 fans. The number, yeah, it's fine, right? Like, it's a midweek show. Wait a minute, let me not talk about the final show. Sorry, I was just looking at the run sheet here that Gerard made, and I think we're missing the final show for the tag league. So let me just very briefly bring that one up. Yeah, there we go. So let's just quickly jump back in time to the 16th of June. Also for the Neo Global Tag League finals. Also in Korakuen Hall in front of 1,009 fans. And I think we can actually kind of compare these back-to-back, right? Like, because both of them are midweek shows in Korakuen, kind of roughly a week apart. And I do think, like, the 1,202, like, in that case, like, is a bit of a better number compared to this one, because them, like, barely getting to 1,000 fans. Now, obviously, like, the show yesterday had a GHC, like, heavyweight title match on it, and that's always going to be a bit more of a draw. But then again, I would still kind of question how much of a draw Shane Haste really is. Endo to some degree is a draw, but like I still wouldn't really like call Shane Haste versus versus Endo really like a massive ticket mover per se, right? So I think that is encouraging that like just generally they can stay above 1,000 fans in Corican, like even if the card isn't like a blowaway card essentially. So let's just talk about the final show real brief. I think really the only two matches worth really talking about are like the junior heavyweight tag title match where Dragon Bane and Alejandro defeating Atsushiko Doge and Hajime Ohara. I enjoyed that match for what it was. I don't think it was like an amazing match or anything like that, but it was just very solidly worked. I think the crowd was into it as well. I think the crowd especially was like into like Dragon Bane and Alejandro. I think those two have just been like a very, very good team overall. I think they really kind of like they mash together pretty well. Like they're very energetic. I think they really get like the crowd into their matches. Like definitely not the best defense of the reign. I mean, it's not like Ohara is just not very good. And Kotoge seems very checked out. Like I wouldn't be shocked if Kotoge is like leaving at some point when like once like his contract expires. But other than that, I enjoyed the match overall. And then the Neo Global Tag League final match, Manabu Soya and Yuki Ino defeating Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows in 25-55 when Soya hit Jonetsu East on Anderson. Like I said earlier, like I thought like the Good Brothers really worked hard. I think they were like, arguably this was like the best match of their entire run. I also really enjoyed like the fire from like Soya and Ino in this match. They just really like went all out there. And again, it's one of those matches where like I flirted with going for it, didn't quite get there for me in the end, but I perfectly enjoyed the match that I saw. And if this is what the Good Brothers give us in like a limited run capacity, then I think bring them back in like a limited run capacity in the future. And then, you know, we'll just see if they can keep this up or if they kind of revert to like what their usual form was. But if it's this form, then I'm not against bringing them back in the future. And then also, who could forget the most important show, which, let us go one more bad day back in time, which was the Wrestle Magic show in Corican Hall on the 15th. Who knows how many people were in there? It didn't look very full, to be quite honest. This one might have actually been under 1,000. It's kind of hard to say. They used a different setup as well. This was a fairly forgettable show overall, I would say. I did enjoy the opener, Naomichi Marufuji and Daiki Urashima going to a time limit draw with Daichi Hashimoto and Fuminori Abe. These are all like pretty good workers. Like obviously Urashima is great, Abe is great, Marufuji really, like the Marufuji resurgence in 2026 is real, and Daichi, you know, is a real solid worker that can be great in spots. And I actually thought he actually also like seemed a bit motivated here as well, because as sad as that sounds, that's probably was one of the bigger like Corican crowds that he's worked in front of all year. So yeah, but no, I enjoyed this one, and like they did a bit of comedy, but not too much. Like I think they did comedy in such a way that it actually worked within like the structure of the match, and I just enjoyed the overall thing of just like Odashima just like fighting back against like getting worked over by Abe and Hashimoto and everything. And yeah, no, it's I enjoyed this match overall. We had Miku Anu, Miyuki Takase, and Zones defeating Nightshade, Johnny Robbie, and Miko Alana in 7:53. when Aono beat Alana with a small package. Yeah, pretty forgettable match. Very short, not really all that much time to really do anything in this. It's kind of like, I mean, it's basically like the match is almost as long as there are people in the match. There's just no time for anybody to really like show off. Then we had a GHC hardcore title match, decision match. So as I mentioned at the beginning, Hikaru Sato had won the hardcore title from Masato Tanaka, but then had to go to the hospital and had to vacate the title. So then they made a decision match here to decide the new champion, and it was Shuji Ishikawa defeating Daisuke Sakamoto in 12:33 with a giant slam. It was fine. I've made my feelings very clear on these like GHC hardcore title matches. I think they're generally just not very good, and if you have like non-bloody hardcore matches, just do not really work for me, and like these generally just feel way too like American TV wrestling for me to ever get into. So yeah, I just do not enjoy them. And then we had now to be fair, this was like a proper like Monday Magic, like Fire Pro random button team in this next one. So Hayata, Rita, and Mao defeating Richport Ayala, Reese Alexios, and Danny Dugan in 14:07. When Mao used the Osaka Rinkai upper on Dugan. It was fine. Again, this was one of those things that's like, oh yeah, this is like a really random team on the Japanese side. Like on the foreigner side, it really was just kind of like the general like fare that we've gotten in terms of like the foreigners on Monday Magic. And yeah, it was fine overall. Nothing special though. Then we had Team Alejandro versus Team Nosawa, Ultimo Dragon, The Great Sasuke, Tsubasa, Hayabusa, and Alejandro defeat Masada, Fujita, Shuji Kondo, Brother Yashi, Takuya Sugawara with Nosawa Rangai in 9:33 when Ultimo pinned Yashi with La Magistral. This really was just like a Tokyo Gurren Time match through and through, which is a bit what Monday Magic has become overall, which just really, really feels like Tokyo Gurren Tai shows. But yeah, especially this match, where it's just like all of like Nosawa's favorites in one match, essentially, with the expected results of like, you know, Dragon using the La Mastral to get the victory. It again didn't really get any time. Let me just quickly count that one out. Yeah, no, it is actually, like I said, for the earlier match, where it's like, there was almost as much time as there were people in this. There were actually more people in this match than the match got time. So, yeah, just not really much of anything in terms of a match. It really was just there as kind of like a crowd pleaser to see like, hey, look at all of these legends, basically. And then another decision match. So Mayu Iwatani had to vacate the GHC women's title. So we got another decision match here with Mirai defeating the Great Sakuya in 12:08 with a lariat. And yeah, I enjoyed this match. I think Sakuya has actually kind of grown kind of into this role. Like, it was very rough early on. Like it was very clear that she wasn't really comfortable with the gimmick and didn't really know how to like properly work, kind of like she didn't really figure out a good way to kind of find the right balance between shtick and wrestling. And I think now she has actually found that like right balance, because early on she was basically all shtick and kind of nothing else, and now she has kind of like pulled that back a little more and just leans a lot more into like, just because, you know, that she is a good wrestler like underneath the gimmick. And she's actually showing that now, and I kind of enjoyed this match here. And then in the main event, we had Zack Sabre Jr., Luis Mante, and Chris Brooks defeating Kaito Kiyo, defeating the Monday Magic Musketeers of Kaito Kiyomiya, Titus Alexander, and Archie Cole in 26:22 when ZSJ tapped out Cole with a modified octopus hold. this was a really good match overall. I mean, these are like most of the, like Archie Cole is pretty young and inexperienced, but like the other guys in this one, like are all like solid workers, solid to great workers. And they showed that here as well. It really was just kind of a good time. Really, everybody kind of got enough time to show off as well, right? Like they got nearly 30 minutes on this. So everybody kind of got to show off their stuff and everything. And it was just like a really nice crowd-pleasing match. Crowd was into this as well. And I think the right result as well. It's just, that's the thing when it's like you saw this lineup and you just knew Archie Cole is the guy that like just is going to take the loss here. Like I don't think that Eva was really in any doubt. I think as much as like Nozawa loves Archie Cole, I don't think he can talk any of these other three guys to be like, hey, yeah, so would you be willing to like, you know, take the pin against this guy that really is kind of not getting booked anywhere else while you three are like, you know, some of the biggest foreign stars in your respective companies? Like, yeah, that's just not gonna fly really. But fun match overall. WrestleMagic, it's, yeah, I don't know. It was a fine show. I don't think you're really going to, like, I don't think you really have to go back and watch it. I don't think you're really missing out on anything if you don't watch it. But, you know, it will, I assume eventually it will just be up on, like, Wrestle Universe with their, like, regular subscription. So you could probably do worse than watch this show. But I don't think I can really like tell you in good conscience to like go and like buy the pay-per-view of this. Like, I don't think it's worth that. But if it like in like 6 months or whatever, when it's like up on like Wrestle Universe, right, and you're kind of just bored one evening, like you can put the show on and like be mostly entertained. Okay. And now we go back to, what I originally wanted to talk about, which is the show from yesterday, the Noah Legacy Rise 2026 from Currican Hall in front of 1,202 fans, right? Again, it's a solid number, right? Like, with, like, the, we know that kind of the current setup of Currican, like, it is a bit limit how many people you can actually put in there. It's just, I think it's a more of a disappointing number compared to what they were drawing last year. But it is, like, but like 2 years ago, I think you would have been very happy to draw this kind of number on a midweek Hurricane. It's just that compared to last year, it's a bit of a disappointing number. So I think it just, I guess in that case, it just kind of evens out a little bit. So let's just kind of go over the show. So Yoshiki, Nomura, Stallion Rogers, and Amaxa defeat Kenno, Kid Lykos, and Kid Lykos 2 in 6:40. When Amaxa pinned Lykos with a crucifix hold. No, he pinned Lykos 2 with a crucifix hold. I'm pretty sure, yeah. This was fine. Didn't, like, good opener, just mostly all action. Didn't really get much time. Amaxa was kind of being kept strong here as well, which would become clearer later why they were doing that. Or rather, would become apparent right in the next match, actually. So in the next match, Daiki Odashima, Yuto Kuanagi, Hiroto Tsuruya, and Midori Takahashi defeat Takashi Segura, Tadasuke, Alpha Wolf, and Jun Masaoka in 4-1 when Tadasuke got disqualified. So this really wasn't much of a match, to be honest. Like, it mostly was a storyline. It's basically the Team 2000X guys just kind of like beat up all of the, like, young boys really, really quickly, and then it just kind of becomes, like, a handicap match, essentially. Like, a bit of, like, a way where they, like, intended it to be a preview, kind of the ladder match that they're gonna do later, where it's basically Daiki Urashima in a handicap match versus a bunch of, like, Team 2000X to get a spot in the N1. So, yeah, he very much, like, he fought on valiantly, but he was, like, obviously, like, completely outnumbered. But then, yeah, Tadasuke, like, got himself disqualified, and then Amaxa actually came in for the save. And yeah, it turns out, no, it isn't actually just Daiki Odashima versus all of Team 2000X. It's actually Amaxa is going to be in that match as well. So yeah, not quite sure where this is all leading. I'm kind of afraid that this is going to lead to a turn of either, I mean, Amaxa would be the obvious one to turn, just kind of from this setup. Odashima wouldn't make any sense to turn, but to be quite honest, I don't want either of them to turn. I think they're both tremendous baby faces. I don't really want either of them to get embroiled too much and like Team 2000X bullshit. We'll see where this whole storyline is going. It would be a bit deflating if this all just ends with like a Team 2000X guy getting into the N1. But then I'm also not sure like if these guys, like basically all of, if the guys that are in this match and they don't win, does that mean they just have no chance of being in the N1 at all? Like, it would be weird if Alpha Wolf isn't in the N1. I guess Takashi Segura not being in would make some sense. He wasn't in, right? Like, he seems to be kind of done with wanting to be in tournaments like this. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure where they're actually leading with this. I think the easiest one would just be, like, Odashima wins the match. And then he has a run in the N1 where, like, he doesn't really get a lot of wins because he is a junior and he is, like, so undersized as well. I think that would be the most entertaining thing from, like, a match quality perspective, but we'll see if that's actually the route that they're going down. And then we had Hayata and Katsumi Inahara defeating Ada and Super Crazy in 5:58 when Hayata pinned Crazy after the 4-3 impact. Again, it didn't really get a lot of time. It was fine for what it was, just, yeah, I'm still not sure I feel about Hayata versus Ada. I'm not, can't say that this really got me excited for the match, to be honest. And then we had Ozawa, Masaki Tamiya, and Kai Fujimura defeating Kaito Kiyomiya, Alejandro, and Dragon Bane in 9:03 when Ozawa pinned Alejandro after the Swan Dive Moonsault Press. And after the match, Masaki Tamiya got back on the microphone, and once again he declared that, like, because all Rebellion are such losers, they are now officially disbanded with this loss. And it appears they actually are. It's not quite clear. So Kaito and Alejandro, like, shook hands after the match, which seemed like, at least English commentary was saying, that it means all Rebellion is done now. I can only hope it is. It's kind of a weird way for them to go out, right? Like, they had an actual, like, unit disbands match that they won, and then they disband on a, like, a random, like, after, like, a random six-man, like, a couple of weeks later. It's just a bit of a very weird story if this, like, is just, like, the actual end now. But I also can't say that, like, I'm too unhappy if it's just, like, at least it's an end, right? So, in German, we have a saying, basically, better a horrible end than horror without ending. And I think that's kind of what, like, All Rebellion started to feel like by the end, where it's just like, okay, we all know this faction is dead, basically. Like, where are we going with this? How much longer are we carrying this on? Like it really started to feel like a thing that is, like, holding everybody in it back. I mean, Alejandro basically has, like, already left it anyway. Like, he's formed the team with Dragon Bane, and they are, like, completely separate from it anyway. Kaito's doing whatever the fuck Kaito is doing, and then Harutoki is now out with a neck injury, so yeah, it very much was just time to just put it out of its misery, and if that's how they do it, I can't really call it a satisfying end, but at least it is an end. And then for the GHC national title, Naomichi Marufuji defeats Shuji Kondo in 12:47 with the perfect neck lock for his second defense of the title. Like I said, the Marufuji resurgence is real. Again, not like a blowaway match or anything like that, but worked perfectly solidly. I enjoyed it. I can make an argument that this was the best match on the show, although I do feel like the main event gets slightly pushed ahead of it, because I enjoyed the finishing sequence of that one more. But again, like, this one was, like, a nice and tidy, you know, like, 12-13 minutes, like, nothing, it doesn't really overstay its welcome, and it was fine for what it was. And a semi-main, we had the GHC tag team title Manabu Soya and Yuki Ino defeating Tetsuya Naito and Bushi in 18:20 when Soya pinned Bushi after the Passion Is, and with that they win the titles from LTJ. This kind of was suffering kind of from the problems that I was talking about earlier with LTJ, right? Like, it's like Bushi has to like do like 80% of the work, and then Naito just mostly just stands there on the apron and then just comes in like for like a bit to like do some shtick and then tags back out to Bushi, basically. Like, that's their match structure. It does work because they're kind of leaning into being assholes a bit more, so I think that helped the match. But I have to say, like, I enjoyed the like Global Tag League final more than I did this match. I do think it was the right call to put the title on Soya and Ino here. I think they're just a more exciting team. They are super over with the crowd as well. Afterwards, Segura and Kitamiya ran in for a beatdown, and they are going to be the first challengers. I hope this isn't just a like zero defense reign. I hope Soya and Ino actually defend the titles in that match, because I do think they've kind of earned themselves like a bit of a longer run. Let's see if Noah actually gives it to them, but I at least think that they've earned themselves the chance to show what they can do. And let me see. Oh, yeah, right. The main event for the GHC heavyweight title, Shane Hayes defeats Tetsuya Endo in 22:50 with the Bomb Valley Death for a second defense of the title. I enjoyed the match. I have to say, I thought it was a weaker match than Hayes' other two title matches. But I don't think that's really on Hayes. I think you have to put that more on Endo. Endo just seemed like very listless in this match, just kind of just doing things mostly. Like, they were very technically very good looking things, but there wasn't really very much kind of like things tying things together, right? Like, there wasn't really anything like where you felt like, oh, this is kind of what he's trying to accomplish in this match. And he also took a lot of this match. Like, that's the other thing, because Endo said before the match that he would have an announcement in case he wins, which actually led me to believe that he was going to win the title here. But then I actually watched the match, and against the match structure, it just seemed much more like a haste win, because Endo just took so much of this match. Like, he just was in control for so long, and Endo just isn't a good control wrestler. Like, he just runs out of ideas. He doesn't really run out of ideas, because he has like a bunch of different moves, but then he doesn't really know very well how to tie things together during a control period. And that just makes it kind of like not very memorable. But then I did like the finishing sequence at the end, and then like Hayes kind of getting a very definitive win at the very end there as well, where he kind of just took out his entire arsenal, and he just took everything in the kitchen sink, he just threw it at Endo, and then just pinned him in the end. So I did like that. And then afterwards, Ozawa came out wearing glasses, doing like the translator gimmick that he had been doing like a couple of months ago as well. And yeah, looks like Ozawa with Haste is going to be the next title match. And yeah, I do think this is probably where Haste's reign ends. Like, I don't think that's really much of a reason. I think that's a good time to end it as well. Like, I've enjoyed the Haste reign overall, but I think putting it back on Ozawa as, like, you know, like the young guy that like is very clearly the future of this company, and giving like Ozawa like another like second long reign and everything to really establish himself as the top guy in Noah is like the right call to make. We'll see how that match actually goes, because I think Ozawa in the second reign really has to show that he can actually like work properly as an ace. So I kind of wrote this up kind of in the like write-up that I did for the 30 on the 30 on him, right? Like, where like the bit of the frustration with him right now is that like his character is like a guy that we know is tremendously talented, but that takes shortcut, and that's why he's a heel. But like, that also feels like what he's actually doing in a weird way, where it's like his character is like what he's doing right now, where he's like, he knows that he's really over, and he's realized that he can rely very heavily on shtick instead of like actual match quality. And that's why I think kind of the match quality of his has like suffered a lot over the last couple of months. But I do think if you're actually the ace at the top of the promotion, I don't think you can really get away with that for too long. And I think he really has to step up in the second reign and really show that he can carry this company. Do I think he has the talent to do that? Absolutely. But we'll see if he actually like will do it as well. I think it's going to be quite a crucial reign for like the future of Noah, this second Ozawa title reign. So yeah, that's what I think kind of, yeah, what the future of Noah is, and we'll see kind of where they go from here. All right, and then moving over to All Japan, kind of similarly, like I'm not gonna go too in depth on like a bunch of the like house show stuff that has happened, because like I don't think you really want to listen to me talk about the Shinkiba show from a month ago. Like, what do you want me to tell you? Like, it was fine mostly, and nothing really of like, not really much of like consequence happened. And if anything of consequence happened, then that was a thing that really was like paid off at like the next big show, really. So not much of a point of me going really in depth here. What I will go talk about a bit more though is kind of the show from the 6th of June from the Nikko Arena Kakuda, also known as the Kakuda City General Gymnasium, in front of 2,118 fans. So this was obviously the big like homecoming show for the Saito brothers, right, where they were like challenging for the tag titles and when they were challenging for the tag titles to like finally regain them. And that's really what like the most important match of the show was as well. But I want to just like briefly touch on the Gayora TV title match as well. So Kuma Arashi defeated Aizawa number 1 in 13 minutes 27 with a diving senton. And this was probably Aizawa number 1's best match ever. Like, I enjoyed this one really well. Like, he worked like insanely hard. Like, he really, like, you could feel the desperation here. Because it was also kind of a bit that like the future of Hawk Shogun was like on the line here as well. And he really didn't want it to die, but eventually, like, it's like Kuma Arashi was just too powerful. Like Arashi really just like tossed Aizawa like around the ring and just really like kind of like relished destroying him, and Aizawa just like desperately trying not to lose and like fighting back and showing some proper fire that I don't think I've really seen him do all that often. And then eventually just, you know, falling to like just Arashi's like superior power and losing the match. And like that diving senton felt very definitive, like that for like the finish. Like you could see it on the crowd as well, but like the crowd was also on Aizawa's side as well. Like they wanted him to win so badly, and then Kuma just crushed him with that senton and pinned him. I really, really enjoyed this match. Probably one of the best, like, best matches of either man's career in terms of singles matches, to be honest. Definitely one I think you can actually kind of go back and watch. Like, I very much enjoyed this one. And then we're going to jump to the main event. So, for the All Japan World Tag Team titles, June and Rei Saito defeat the Titans of Calamity, Ren Ayabe and Talos, in 26:59, when Rei pinned Ayabe after the fallout, and the champions fail on the fourth defense, and the Saito brothers regain their titles and become the 104th champions. This was great. This was awesome. This was such a good match. Like, All Japan really has found gold with this, like, Titans of Calamity team. Like, these guys just really, like, complement each other so well. Like, they're just two tall fuckers. And they just project that so well. Like, they just, like, they make the Saitos look small. And it's really hard to make the Saitos look small. And, yeah, these guys were just brawling all over the arena and just beating the shit out of each other. And, like, that finishing sequence was just insane. And that crowd was so hard. that crowd just was just like living and dying by like every single thing the scientists did here, like every single like near fall. They were like ready to like lose their minds for like the Titans winning. Every single time the Titans got like a near fall, they were like ready to just like despair of like their like disbelief that the Titans could actually lose this match. And then when the Titans actually got the win, like they just went mental and yeah, just insanely good match. I went 4.5 on this. I love this match. This was just tremendous tag team work from both men. And yeah, please more of this. I'm generally a big fan of the Saitos, but like the Saitos like in the home province are just like on another level, just absolutely insane. And then we're kind of gonna again like jump over some of these like house shows. I think maybe just briefly touch on the Shinjuku Face Show that they did on the 11th, where you had Go Shiozaki versus Zion in like. Where Go Shiozaki beat Zion in 2044 with a strong arm lariat. And I have to say, I never expected a Zion match that went like 20 minute Zion match to be this good. I didn't go for anything on that, but like, it was a good match overall. Like, Go Shiozaki is just on fire right now. Zion really like put a lot of effort. It also turns out, I think this one was actually his last match. Before going back. I mean, I would very much expect Zion to be back because he is super over. He seems to be very motivated to be in All Japan. So I definitely expect him to be back, but like this was like the last match of this current run that he was on. And yeah, very clearly worked like a guy that was also like working to be back in the future as well. And then we go to the 18th. Of June to the Superpower Series 2026 in Tokyo Kurikan Hall in front of 1,504 fans, super new vacancy, full house. People were literally hanging from the rafters. Well, not literally, but almost literally. This was a very packed Kurikan Hall. They sold this show out very, very quickly. Like, this show was sold out way in advance. This wasn't... Like, if you were going that day off, you had no chance of getting anything. Like, they open up the balconies, like, in advance as well, after all of the seats had sold out. And, like, those tickets sold out super quickly as well. Now, obviously, I mean, Kento, like, not to put anything against, like, Kento and Hideki. Like, I do think, like, especially Kento has shown that he is a draw. I think Hideki, to some degree, has shown that he can draw, like, good numbers as well, like, throughout the years. But you very much have to attribute this number to, like, you very much have to attribute this number to, like, Yuma Anzai Mania and, like, the Yuma Anzai, like, boost that he got from being on The Bachelorette. I don't think he's going to, like, I don't think they're going to draw this number at the show otherwise. Like, okay, maybe they do sell out all of the seats, but I don't think it sells out as quickly as the show did. And you could very much feel this as well. And you got the reports from people in the building as well that, like, there were people there where, like, this was their first ever wrestling show that they went to. And you could feel it with the reactions that, like, Yuma Anzai got as well. And I think, cleverly, I don't know, I don't want to call that too early, but I do think All Japan actually did manage to, like, transfer some of that to, like, other people as well, right? I do feel they actually... created some new wrestling fans at the show that are going to come back to like see, to not just see Yuma Anzai, but to see All Japan Pro Wrestling and to see guys like Go Shiozaki and to see guys like Kento and like Dan Tamura, right? So I do think All Japan has like managed to like make some new fans here. Yeah, so I'm kind of gonna like. Do I have enough time? Let's see. What time is it right now? I really would only skip like two matches. So I'm just briefly going to touch on them anyway. So in the opener, Hokuto Omori, Yasutaka Yano, Masayuki Kono, Fuminori Abe, and Yuya Aoki defeat Zion, Musashi, Seki Yoshioka, Shota Kofuji, and Hyo Ogawa. In 7:22, when Yano pinned Kofuji with a jackknife hold. Yeah, it's with Yano, he's here. He's not going to go anywhere, unfortunately. So it's just, it is what it is. And we just, yeah, I could kind of have to move forward with it, unfortunately. So, yeah. Again, solid enough opener overall, but again, not really enough time to get anything really done. Like, I'm not even sure everybody tagged into the match. I'm not sure everybody did, but yeah. But then, what might have been like the greatest second from the bottom match in All Japan history? We had the junior title match where Dan Tamura defeats Seigo Tachibana in 21-24 with a powerbomb to win the title, to become the 74th champion. They finally paid off this feud that they started what feels like 20 years ago. It's a bit of an exaggeration, but I'm pretty sure they started this feud at the end of March. And then they paid it off in like mid-June. It went on for a long time. But I mean, boy did they pay it off. Like, absolute banger of a match. Like, Seigo Tachibana, I think, I mean, listeners of the show are well aware how great Seigo Tachibana is. Like, if you're somehow listening to the show and you don't know how great Seigo Tachibana is, like, did you just intentionally skip over it every single time we were talking about him? Like, he's pretty damn great, like, when he's been given opportunities to, like, work, like, serious matches. And I think Dan, with the right opponent, is capable of just having a really great match as well. And, like, very clearly, like, Seigo is one of those opponents. We had, like, reports from, like, people that were, like, there that, like, a good chunk of the crowd was, like, crying as well when Dan won the title. Like, Dan fans really are on another level. Like, Dan fans are just, like, ride or die Dan Tamura fans, and they are hardcore. Like, they will just put all of their emotions into his wins, and I have to say, it is kind of very endearing, because it shows that they just care very, very deeply about him, and, like, him winning this title again, and all of that. And yeah, it was an amazing match as well, just in very, very physical, just, you know, Dan really doing his, like, Power Junior style, and, like, Seigo, I mean, Seigo sneakily is also kind of a Power Junior as well, so these two just kind of hit each other, like, really, really hard. And yeah, absolutely great match, 4.25 on this. I absolutely love this match. And then we had Ren Ayabe, Talos, and Daisuke Sekimoto, and Kang Yoshimashimo defeating Jun Saito, Rei Saito, Ryuki Honda, and Kuma Arashi in 13-11. After referee stop, when Kengo Mashimo had Jun in the Mudo, and Jun passed out and the ref stopped the match. I mean, big win, obviously, here for Kengo over the former Triple Crown champion. And then Kengo challenged the Saitos for a tag team title match, and Daisuke Sekimoto is going to be his partner. I'm looking forward to that. That should be a really good match. Next up, we have the NWA World Heavyweight title match between Silas Mason defeats Shotaro Oshino in 7 minutes 10 with the Scrap Buster. I was wearing my Master of Suplex shirt because I wanted to believe, and I had to award myself the Fell For It Again award after the match, because Oshino did not win the title. Very clearly, this was probably part of the kind of the Titans of Calamity winning the Crockett Cup. So then in return, Silas got to come to Japan and be the guy here. The match was good. I mean, it was 7 minutes. So it wasn't really all that much you can do in that time. But he definitely worked like a guy that, like, you can bring back. I think Silas is one of those guys. Like, I think he's talented. He obviously has good size, has a good build. Like, I think he's very solid in the ring as well. But I think working in Japan, and actually specifically working in All Japan, would do wonders for him. I think he's really one of those guys where, like, you give this guy, like, a good solid 3 to 6 months in All Japan, and he is going to transform himself into really, really great worker. So if that is actually going to be the case, we'll see. But I think that's something that, like, if he's willing to do it and if All Japan is willing to do it, that's absolutely something they should do. And then next, we have Goshi Ozaki and Yuma Anzai defeating Suwama and Yuma Aoyagi in 1628 after Shiozaki beat Suwama with the strong arm lariat. This was pretty damn great as well. Like, the crowd was obviously really into this because this was the match a lot of them actually came to see. Because they were really into Yuma Anzai. But I do think, like, I would not be surprised if, like, a good chunk of the people that came for just Yuma Anzai were cheering for Goshi Ozaki by the end of this match. Because him and Suwama, like, this match was really much more focused about, like, Suwama and Shiozaki. Where those two just kind of just beat each other up really hard. And, like, Shiozaki just really showed off why he is so likable, right? Like, because he is just this kind of like underdog and he just looks so vulnerable because, well, I mean, it is a bit of a shoot because the man is like 60% tape at this point. But I think it just really enhances what, like, has kind of always been like Shiozaki at his best when he's just this kind of like tragic hero. And he's just like desperately fighting from underneath against Suwama. And then he was, like, on the verge of just, like, losing to Suwama. And then Anzai comes in at the very last second to, like, hit the knee on Suwama to, like, save Goshi Ozaki. And then Shiozaki, like, rallies from there and actually manages to get the win. And the crowd goes nuts. And, yeah. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go 4 on this. I really enjoyed this match. And then we had All-Asia Tag Team title match. Atsuki Aoyagi and Rising Hayato defeating Ishin and Yoshiki Kato in 1904, when Aoyagi pinned Kato after the fireball splash and also crushing his fucking face with it as well, where the champions fail on the first defense, and Atsuki and Hayato become the 132nd champions. It was fine. I thought it was a little disappointing, to be quite honest. With Atsuki, I really feel like he's kind of stalled out in his development. And I think Hayato's still pretty good, but I also think he's stalled out a little bit or at a higher level than Atsuki has. Like, they're both still young. They both still have more than enough time to, like, basically start developing again. But I think right now it feels like both of them have kind of peaked in their development. And yeah, and I thought this match would be a lot better than it would be. It wasn't bad. But I also felt like it could have been a lot better than what it was. Obviously, I think this kind of like ends this whole like Dragon Gate kind of involvement for now. Because also, actually, I forgot to mention this earlier, talking about the Noah section, where actually Rita and Jackie Funky Kamei actually popped up in Noah to challenge Dragon Bane and Alejandro for the GHC junior titles. So it seems like, I mean, it's not out of the question that, like, Dragon Gate and All Japan still keep working together going forward despite that. But generally in the past, it's like you really only have like two promotions working together at the same time. So I wouldn't be surprised if this maybe signals like a shift for like Dragon Gate to work a bit more with Noah going forward than All Japan. But yeah, we'll see what it actually means in the future. Yeah. And then in the main event for the Triple Crown, Kento Miyahara defeats Hideki Suzuki in 1708 with the Shutdown Suplex for a seventh defense. Really, this could have gone either way. I think Kento keeping the title is the right decision. I wouldn't have been against like Hideki like getting like a bit of like a gold watch reign here, because he really has been putting in a lot of work over the last couple of years. But I guess just having him win the like Champion Carnival already is enough of an achievement for him, to be honest. So, yeah, I'm not really against this. I think Kenta has been doing good work. I really like this match as well. I think really like Hideki is one of those guys that can kind of like take Kenta a bit out of its comfort zone as well, right? Because like with all of his technical wrestling as well, like I think it just makes for like a really good match structure. Where like for example you had like the one spot right like where like Kenta kind of got out of like kicked out of like a pin from Hideki, and then Hideki like immediately scrambled to like get another hold onto Kenta. To really show that, like, it's, like, the relentlessness of, like, Hideki's work, right? Like, when he's, like, doing his, like, mat grappling, where it's, like, he's not gonna let you get any time to, like, really get some breathing room. Like if you somehow manage to get out of his stuff, he is just immediately gonna, like, try and get on another hold on you so that you don't have any time to, like, recover from, like, the damage that you suffered from the previous hold. So, yeah, I think that works really well. And then, obviously, Kento's, like, comeback sequences are pretty good as always, and then yeah, he put him away in the end. I would go like a 4.25 on this. Really good match. It's really between this and the junior title match. I thought both of those were great. I think actually maybe the like just emotional moment of like the junior title match, I think maybe that puts it slightly ahead for me. But yeah, just really solid show top to bottom, like in front of like an insanely hardcore American crowd from all Japan. I think they really are like on fire right now. They definitely have a lot of momentum. Like I think kind of feels a little bit similar to like the momentum that like Noah had last year with like the Ozawa title reign and everything. They really do need to capitalize on this like Anzai popularity. I'm not sure how they're gonna do it because it doesn't really seem like he's factoring into the Triple Crown picture right now. Seems like they're moving him in back into the All Asia Tag Team title scene. I don't know. I don't know if that's a mistake or not. Like, in theory, you should capitalize on it by, like, Anzai, like, winning the Triple Crown and, like, getting back on top. But obviously, that wasn't their, like, long-term plan that they've had. So it does seem like All Japan very much is just gonna like stake the course and stick with whatever long-term plans they've had and not just hotshot Anzai to the title. We'll see if that works out for them or not. But obviously on this show, like, you had a really hot crowd that was super into everything, and just, I would say this was... I think it's very easy to say that. I think this was All Japan's best show of the year so far. Time will tell whether or not they can capitalize on this momentum or if they end up squandering a bit. But right now, like, they definitely have a ton of momentum, and it's a very enjoyable kind of promotion to watch as well. Then I'm just briefly going to touch on the Shinkiba show that they had on the 24th. Again, super no vacancy, full out in front of 340 fans. But again, like, their Shinkiba shows always sell out, as I had to find out the hard way in January. Or rather, at the end of last year, basically, when I went to the Yoyogi show and I wanted to buy tickets for the Shinkiba show there. And turns out Shinkiba, that was like at the middle of January. So like basically a solid 2 weeks away. And at that point, the show had already been sold out because the All Japan hardcores just really love themselves the Shinkiba shows, and I think it always really helps like the atmosphere for the shows as well. Really, like, the only thing of note on here was, or rather, two things of note, three things of note. basically, is that kind of three title matches were decided. So Naruki Doi is going to challenge Dan Tamura for the junior title, which will be on the 25th of July in Kobe. And then similarly on that same Kobe show, which they're really kind of loading up, is you will have Rene Yabe challenging Kento Miyahara for the Triple Crown. So again, we're not moving Anzai into this picture because Anzai instead is going to challenge for the All Asia Tag title. Because on this show, him and Shotoku Fuji defeated Yuma Aoyagi and Yasutaka Yano, which I actually forgot to mention earlier. So after the All Asia Tag title match, Yano comes out and he is like challenging Aoyagi and Hayato, and he just says that like his partner is going to be Yuma, and the crowd goes wild. But no, it turns out actually his partner is going to be Yuma Aoyagi, which the crowd did not take well. They very much were like not happy about that, which they kind of played up, because I will say this actually was a really good bait and switch, because then Shota Kafuji comes in and he's like, well, wait a minute. No. Why? Like, I actually also want to challenge for these belts, and my partner is also going to be Yuma. And then Yuma Anzai comes out and the crowd goes wild, and then they set up this like number one contendership match, and then yeah, Anzai and Kafuji won. They're going to challenge Aoyagi and Hayato. I don't know if you want to capitalize on the Yuma momentum. I think you kind of have to have him win, to be quite honest. I get that Kafuji is like a young boy and everything, but like I do think, like, if you really want to like keep Anzai's momentum, you kind of have to have him win that match. It would be weird for like for two people so high up in the junior division like Aoyagi and Hayato to like lose the titles this quickly after like winning a tournament and everything. But like, I don't know, like with Anzai, I don't think you want him to lose, even if he's obviously not going to be the guy taking the loss in here. I think you want him to like win the titles and just carry on his momentum. But we'll see if they're going to do that. But yeah, it's going to be a while until like I said, like the next kind of major show of note is about a month away. Like they're going to do a bunch of stuff to like set things up until then. We'll see what All Japan, like again, right now I very much enjoy what All Japan is doing. And I think that's going to continue for the foreseeable future as well, hopefully. But yeah, we are going to be back at some point soon. It kind of depends when Dorado's feeling better, when we're going to be recording the special on Joe Doering then. And until then, enjoy all of the wrestling out there. Bye-bye.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.